Hey guys, Melissa here. I blog at our family website, www.thecorkums.com, which we affectionately call the Corkboard. This is the Uncorked Podcast. If I had to choose a descriptor for our family, it would be outside the box. Whether it's adopting three unrelated adolescents out of birth order, or trying to run a coffee shop in our quote-unquote spare time right after adopting, we love adventure. We had to give up that coffee shop, and our three oldest kids are launched for now. But with lots of extended family living at home and a full-time wellness business, there still aren't many dull moments. We've met so many amazing people with fascinating stories along our journey. I'd love to introduce them to you. You're listening to episode 9 of the Uncorked Podcast. One of my favorite things to do is ask my guests to nominate another guest before we hang up the phone. That's how I connected with my guest this week, O'Shea, founder of Dress Again. There's really nothing I love more than hearing a story of someone who saw a problem, had an idea, and jumped into action, and is now making a huge impact on the world. That's totally what O'Shea has done after the most unlikely encounter with a dry cleaner. Who knew? Keep listening to hear how this everyday, extraordinary mama is making her mark on the world. Well, this week I'm welcoming my guest O'Shea to the podcast. O'Shea, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
O'Shea, I heard about you from one of my guests, Nicole, and you came so highly recommended, and Nicole was so excited to share a little bit about your story with me, and I heard it and checked out some of the work that you were doing, and I'm so excited to be able to share your story with our listeners.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I'll have to tell Ms. Nicole, thank you.
So I guess to start off, could you just introduce yourself to the listeners? So, you know, whether it be just about yourself or a little bit about your family, to kind of just give us a picture of who you are as a person.
Okay. Who is a person? I am a wife of 12 years. I have four children. The oldest one is turning 11. The youngest one is 3. I homeschool 2 of them currently. Up until last year, I homeschooled all of them. The older two then needed something different, so we decided to do something different with them. And I am the president of a nonprofit organization that I started about 4 years ago. Let's see, what else is a person? I am a Christian. My faith is a very, very big part of my life, or my life is a big part of my faith, I guess. I live in Boston. Pretty affects my life quite a bit. I'm trying to get a dog.
That's a hard process. We adopted a dog, maybe 6 years ago. And it was right in between two of our adoptions. And
wow.
I felt like getting a dog should be simpler.
And yeah, it's not.
I know. And I felt like, wow, this is kind of just like adopting a kid. I mean, not really, but it was way more intense than I expected it to be. And we live in a house where my parents live in an apartment in our house. And so, I mean, we're all family and it's fun, but sometimes I forget that they're there, or I forget that that's a big deal. And when we went to get this dog, and it was a rescue, she was a rescue from just a local rescue up the street who takes in strays, I guess. And anyway, they found out that there were other adults living in our house, and it like put the whole shebang on hold. They wanted my parents to go up and meet her, and they had to like get their information.
Wow.
And it was really like a big deal. And I thought, wow, it's pretty impressive. So you're trying to get a dog, and that's what made me think of that whole tangent. So what does that look like for you guys?
Oh yeah. Well, about 6 months ago, I started looking around at different shelters, and I found a dog that would have been really great, and we loved it, and our family has been wanting a dog for a really long time. I had one growing up, and so I was like, I got to get my kids a dog. And so we put in the application, and we got recommendations and all of this stuff, and it went through the whole thing. And the people at the shelter were like, this looks great. We're going to give you the dog. We just need permission from your landlord. And I was like, oh, that's fine. There are tons of dogs that live in this community already. So I sent it over to my landlord, and they denied it. And we were like, but everybody has a dog. And they said, oh, well, they're all grandfathered in and we just changed the rules and you can't get a dog. And I was crushed. And so I want to teach my children to respect authority and respect the rules that are put in place over them. And so I wasn't going to just do like everybody else did and get a dog regardless. So I let it go for a little while. And then I was talking to a friend, might have been Nicole, maybe my sister, and our pediatrician, and they said that my son would really benefit from having a dog because he has a lot of some sensory issues.
Yeah.
And they said that dogs are really good for that. He's very tactile. He likes touching people, and that gets him into trouble. So if he has a dog, you can touch the dog, and nobody will get in trouble. And they said, I can get a special form through my apartment complex that will let us get a dog because he needs one. And so we started that process. And this has been going on for a month, this process back and forth with the apartments trying to get this to work out.
Wow. That's, I hope it works out for you because it sounds like a dog would be a great thing for your family.
Yeah.
I don't know what the laws are in Massachusetts, but I know that every state has different rules for, you know, therapy dogs. And we live in Maryland, and so you have to jump through 100 million hoops to do anything in the state. So there's nothing easy. But I had a friend who lived in New York, and they had different levels of therapy dogs. So there were like skilled therapy dogs where it was like a seeing eye dog or something, you know, where they could, yeah, you know, sense that you're going to have a seizure or help you walk across the street successfully or whatever. But then they also had this like therapy dog that was more for mental health or emotional support dogs. And mm-hmm. paperwork and the process to get one of those dogs was extremely minimal. And
yeah, it wasn't too bad. The pediatrician had to fill out a form that said that this would be good for my son. And then I guess, I don't know, the apartment management lawyers or something have to do something with it.
Great. Well, I wonder if it'll transfer. Like, so I know that in New York, once she got this paperwork that she needed a therapy dog and that this one dog was her emotional support dog, she could use that anywhere. And so she used to bring him on the train back and forth from New York to Baltimore as a therapy dog. And the paperwork
really
came out of New York, but it was had to be recognized in any state. So she could basically take the dog anywhere and just show her New York paperwork that said this is a therapy dog. So you
that
should look into that.
Very interesting. I should.
Because that would be like a double win.
Yeah, it would. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're getting a dog and you have four kids, two who went, did they go to school? What's their school situation? I'm only asking because I'm nosy and because we homeschool our kids, but they've all, it started as six homeschooled and then they kind of all eventually went off and did different things. And so I'm down to two. And one recently, just like 4 weeks ago, started public high school. So I'm just kind of curious
Wow.
what your experience has been.
Well, kind of, it's been kind of a process like that. I mean, the whole idea behind homeschooling, at least from my perspective, was to be able to give my children the best available option for their education. And the Boston public schools are a little bit of a sorry mess. And not only academically are they rather sad, there's also a lot of propaganda and things like that that's fed into the curriculum. And having four children to one teacher versus 20 children to one teacher and being able to do things like take them places or, you know, these classes in the middle of the day or field trips when we needed it or, you know, extra time studying this thing when they get really into it or, you know, being able to really dive into a topic proved very beneficial educationally and emotionally and all of that stuff for my kids. They did really, really well with it. So we did homeschooling for quite a while. And then as my son, my daughter's the oldest. She's turning 11. My son, who is 9. As he got older and some of these sensory things came into play in different ways, it became more and more of a struggle working with him. And he would fight with me almost every day about schoolwork. And like he has this fantastic imagination. His reading levels are through the roof, but getting him to write something, like he could tell a whole story in pictures. He would draw all these pictures, but getting to actually write, the exercise of writing, was super frustrating for him. And so it would be a fight every single day, every single day. And it became clear that for him, homeschooling was no longer the best option because he wasn't learning from me and we were fighting all the time. So we started looking into other options. We did put him in a public school for about 6 months and he didn't learn anything, but we did discover that he did very well in a classroom setting, having a different form of authority, somebody else instructing him was really good for him. And having the structure of a classroom versus the laid back sort of a style at home really helped him. So we found, it's a private school. We found a private school where academically they're very strong, but also he's in that classroom environment. There's a structure. And this year he has a male teacher, which is a big deal. I think he really respects this man in this position of authority as well. And so he has done so well. Writing has not been an issue anymore. I don't know what they did. I don't know if it's just being in a different setting or having the structure or having a different authority. I don't know what it is. But he's gotten past that issue. So it's really benefited him a lot. My daughter, when we first sent Timothy to school, my son, when we first sent him, my husband didn't want him going alone. So the two oldest went together. And it turns out that my daughter learns well anywhere. She's one of those kids who just soaks up information. And she's social, so she doesn't mind the social setting. And she's academically inclined. So she does really well with the book work and with all of that stuff. And after having several years of homeschooling as sort of a foundation, they went into their new school very easily. They were already up on all the information that they were learning, so it wasn't a difficult transition in that way. And the kids there were super nice to them, so that wasn't a difficult transition. And they ended out the year on honor roll. And I'm going, okay, this is a really good fit for them. So we sent them back again this year, and we intend for them to stay in the school until they've aged out of that school. It goes, I think, until 8th grade. Our younger two, who are 5 and 3, I intend to homeschool them until either they need something different or they get up to about 4th or 5th grade where their brother and sister were, and then they can go into that class too.
Yeah, I love that flexibility and kind of the ability to meet our kids where they are in different seasons. I was just talking to another mom, mm-hmm. and she's really struggling with what to do with her daughter. And I said, you know, the great thing about education decisions is at the end of the day, they're really not permanent. I've even done multiple things with kids, you know, over a single year, which in terms of transitioning and adjustment isn't always the best fit. It was in our case, mm-hmm. but just because of extenuating circumstances, we were forced to do certain things. But at the end of the day, it's just not, at least in our area, you know, it's just not that hard to transition to homeschool. And then, you know, if you want to put your kid back in school, especially a public school, I mean, obviously it's different with private schools who can have their own rules and their own timelines and such. But in public schools, you know, they pretty much have to take them whenever you want them to go. And so I have taken that pretty liberally for our family. And I've enrolled children at times that I'm sure the school didn't appreciate. Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. And I'm a huge fan of outsourcing what we can to keep our sanity. And sometimes that just means sending a kid to school. And so I totally, and I love homeschooling. So I love Two, when families can recognize that there's really great things in both worlds and that our kids need different things. So that's, I guess, really the moral of that story.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me a little bit about this nonprofit that you run that you kind of slipped into that introduction about yourself. It's called Dress Again. And so that's about all I know about it, besides briefly what I looked on your webpage, because I'm a really horrible podcaster and didn't do my homework. So you get the privilege to put it in your own words and tell us all what that's all about.
Okay, so it will make the most sense if I tell you how it started, and then the whole rest of what we do will fall into order. About 4 years ago, it was in February, I went into a dry cleaner's to get my own wedding dress cleaned and preserved. And when I brought it in, I left it at the counter with the lady. And the lady says to me, "You're coming back to get it, right?" I was like, "Yeah." I made this face like, "Of course I'm coming back to get it." And she goes, "You would be surprised how many women don't." She said, "They come in here and they drop off their dresses and I never see them again. I have a whole stack of wedding dresses in the back room that just got abandoned. They just got left here." And my jaw just about fell on the counter, because wedding gowns are expensive.
Well, right. Do you pay for that service?
No, that one you don't. And actually, I don't think most of the places you prepay for it. And it's not a cheap service either. It's like $120 to get it preserved. So these women are bringing in their dresses and leaving them there. And now the dry cleaner is stuck with the dress. But that isn't even what got me. It was that women spend $1,000 on this dress, wear it once, and then throw it away. And it was really like, I'm sitting here going, this is such a ridiculous waste. So many women can't afford a wedding dress. And there's this whole stack of dresses in the back room doing nothing. And on top of that, it's a resource. You could take these dresses and turn them into money and use it to help somebody, and it's just getting thrown away. And I was like, this is really messed up.
I love how that's how you think. Like, I feel like they've probably had that conversation with a dozen other women who were like, "Oh gosh, that really stinks. You have so many wedding dresses." And then they walked out the door, and instead,
and
you're thinking,
their dress.
Right, exactly. And you're thinking, "Oh my gosh, there's so many wedding dresses back there. That's a tragedy." And then you took the next step, which is to do something about it. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out.
Well, yeah. Well, I walked out of there going, "I can't believe this is such a waste. This is such a waste." And God talked to me and he said, "Do something about it," which is ridiculous, because I went to college for like a year, and it was for photography. I have no sort of business training. I have no sort of like marketing, nothing that would say you would be cut out for this sort of a thing. And so I was like, okay, I don't know how to do this. And so I kind of made a deal with God. And I said, if you want it to work, you have to do everything. I will gladly give you the credit for it, but you have to make it work, because I don't know what I'm doing. And so there was the first step. And I went to City Hall and I registered our business name. And after that, it was amazing. Like, he really did make everything work. He just poured everything into it and out. And it more and more people were really generous. I had people coming and giving me wedding gowns. I had never met them before. Somebody, a friend of a friend, had told them, or they saw something online or whatever. And they just came and brought me their dress. They were like, "Here." And at this point, we weren't even an official nonprofit. So there was no kind of tax credit for them for doing this. They were just giving me their dress. And so I started with 5 gowns, and I now have like 250 gowns.
That's amazing. Did that first dry cleaner give you the dresses from the back?
Interestingly enough, they didn't. The first 5 dresses I had, I bought myself from a dry cleaner. They sold them to me for $50 a dress, which was like a third of what it would have cost the bride to get them cleaned and preserved. And I bought them out of my own money. And I was like, okay, I have 5 dresses. And I'm going to resell them and I'll give that money to somebody who can do something good with it. And my mom, of course, who is a major supporter of everything I do, started telling all these people, and people came and brought me dresses. Some women brought me brand new gowns that they had never worn. This one lady came in. It was hilarious. She had the most sheepish look on her face. She goes, I found a dress I liked better, and they wouldn't take this one back, so you can have it. Then she wanted to do something good, which made me happy. So we have been given dresses that have never been worn. We've been given dresses that have been worn and cleaned. We've been given dresses that have been worn and not cleaned. And so we take wedding gowns and we take bridesmaids and mother of the bride and prom dresses. We even have a quinceañera dress, which is pretty epic. You'd have to see it. We have flower girl dresses and then all the accessories. We get veils and shoes and underskirts and tiaras and all this stuff. And we're able to sell these dresses for probably 10% of what you would pay in a regular bridal shop. The most expensive dress we have is like $150. And most of them run average about $100. And so we've been able to help women get a wedding gown inside their budget, and they still have this amazing dress so that they can have a spectacular wedding day. And all of the money that we take in from selling these dresses, we donate into other local charities. We support a women's safe house. It's a local safe house, which, oh my gosh, I didn't even know we needed a safe house until I went to one of their conferences. And apparently human trafficking is a huge issue in New England, in Boston. And I was like, it was devastating. And what they did is they built this home, and I think they can have 18 women. But it's not just a place where they stay. It's a place where it's whole person healing. They give them job training, and they let them rest, and they let them hide for a while, and they give them counseling, and they give them training for stuff, and they teach them how to be a confident human being, and they share the gospel with them, and it's just this amazing organization. We support a pregnancy center. We support a team of missionaries. We support this organization that deals with homeless people. They provide clothing and shelter and food, and they do a jail ministry. So all of the money that's coming into Dress Again through sales and fundraising is going right back out to different organizations in the community. So these dresses that were getting thrown away or left at dry cleaners are now being turned into help for somebody else. And it's been really amazing seeing that original vision realized, like seeing it actually work. Last quarter, we cut a check for $300 to AmeriHouse, the safe house. And it doesn't sound like a whole heck of a lot of money. Oh, $300. But that's the biggest check we've ever been able to write. And every quarter, we give to one of these organizations. And the first check we wrote, it was $20. And the next check we wrote was $60. And then after that, it was $80. And we've worked our way up to $300. We've been able to give this back to these organizations, and people are being helped, and people's lives are being saved. And you know, people who are going hungry are getting a meal, and seeing this work is amazing.
That must be so satisfying to you. I know we did some nonprofit work for a while, and I'll tell you, just like you said at the beginning, if it's not God ordained and it's not your season, it just doesn't happen. There's too many things in life and too much red tape and all the things. And if you've never done nonprofit work, like really behind the scenes nonprofit work, like it is daunting. There's just so much stuff that has to be done that no one ever really thinks about. That's especially when you're a small organization, or, you know, or just kind of a organic thing or one woman shop or whatever. And I know you have other people around you now that are helping out, but it is just, there's just so much little stuff, and there's so many things to know. You don't even know what you don't know. It's just insane.
That's the truth. Oh my gosh. You start doing something you've never done before and you will find out how much you don't know.
Yeah. And then, like you mentioned, that you were not the person to do this because you didn't have the training and all of these things. And I'm thinking, and you have at that time three little kids and you're homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you fit it all in?
I serve an incredible God, and I have an amazing, amazing husband. Right now, currently, I'm actually standing in Dress Again's designated space. It is the spare bedroom of my house. And so all of this stuff is kept here. And people who find out about us and who need a dress, they'll call me or they'll send an email or whatever. And we'll set up an appointment for them to come here. We really need a retail space.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah, but they come here and, you know, they'll come into this spare room and they're allowed to just go through all of the dresses I have and pick their absolute favorite. And, you know, before they start, I ask them what's their budget, and we work it out so that they can do it all inside their budget and they get the things that they need. Ooh, all right. So this is one of my favorite, this is one of those moments that made me go, wow, I'm so honored and amazed that I get to do this. We had one girl come in here. She had heard about it through a friend at church. Her and her mom came, and she needed a dress. Her fiance was paying for absolutely everything except for her dress. And her and her mother both work like 10-hour days at, I don't know, minimum wage or something, because it takes both of their jobs just to pay their rent, right? And so we were talking about what she would be able to afford and how much the average dresses cost. And I said the one she picked was $150, right? And this was like a $1,000 dress. And the face she made, she just, like, she was completely crestfallen. I saw the look between her and her mother's eyes. How are we going to raise this money to get this dress? And Dress Again has, we have started, we call it the 11th dress. For every 10 dresses we sell, we can give one away. And we had sold 10 dresses at this point. And I told her, I said, listen, fill out, you don't have to like fill out all this paperwork, but we need, like, you know, a copy of your income, and then write us a letter that says why you need the dress. And she did, and she came back, and she picked her favorite dress, and she got a veil, and she got shoes, and she got a crown and gloves, and she looked amazing, and we gave her the dress. And just being able to do that for her, and the look on her face when we said, you can just have the dress, it's yours. She sent me a picture from her wedding, and she was so beautiful and so happy, and it was really amazing to be able to actually make that kind of a difference, see that kind of a difference being made, because I know we make that kind of a difference. I know that you know, when we give that $100, when we give that $300, I know that's going to help somebody and save somebody, but being actually able to see someone's life be touched, it was incredible. And after her wedding, she got married in the Dominican Republic, and then her and her husband moved back to the States. And after her wedding, when she moved back, it was a couple months later, right? So I hadn't heard from her in a while. And I get this text out of nowhere, and it says, we're back in Boston. I want to help. What can I do to help your organization? I want to volunteer. And she goes, you did such an amazing thing for me. I want to be able to help too. She modeled for us in our fashion show that we do in the summer. And it was really amazing having her be able to come back into Dress Again and be a part of it, because it had helped her and she wanted to help us help somebody else. It was really, really cool.
That's such an awesome story. I have like goosebumps from that. And as you were talking, it made me think, do dresses come back?
I have had dresses come back. Yes. I had one girl. This was really cool. I had one girl. She has been working with us for a while. We have a fashion show every summer. And I have some people who volunteer regularly for us. And this one girl who volunteered for us all the time, she came in and she goes, I'm getting married. I need a dress. And I was like, that's super cool. So we picked her out a couple of dresses, one for her ceremony and then one for the reception. And she was really happy because she was working, you know, like inside this real skinny budget. And she knew that she could, you know, get a dress from us because she had worn half of them in our fashion shows. And so she gets her dress and then she goes, right? And then, like, I don't know, 3 weeks before her wedding, she calls me and she goes, I need another dress. And I said, two isn't enough? And she said, no, I need another dress because a friend of mine is getting married and she couldn't get a dress, so I gave her one of mine. I need another dress. And I was like,
oh, that's so sweet.
You know? It's amazing. It's like, it's like this ripple. You throw a rock in a pond and the ripple goes out and it goes out and it goes out way farther than you'd ever think. And I'm going, this is amazing. And so she came back and got another one. But yeah, I've had people bring dresses back and say, you know, thank you for the dress and thank you for what you did. And here's the dress back. Let's get it to another woman who needs it.
That's so beautiful because, like you said, you know, we spend so much money on these weddings and they're fleeting to a certain extent. I mean, obviously, there's relationship around them and hopefully they represent a long marriage. But I love the idea that a dress can have so many lives because you only wear it for such a short period of time and it's just such a beautiful thing. I'm thinking, though, as you're talking, and I'm thinking on one hand, I'm thinking you're crazy for doing this out of your home. Like one of my questions was going to be to ask you about your space and all of these things. And then you were like, and I'm in my spare bedroom where I have 250 dresses. But then I'm thinking the beauty of that, because we've also owned a retail space in our adventures as a family, and it's not easy. It's hard. And the retail space we owned happened to be a good 45 minutes from our house, which is just insane.
Oh, wow.
Never do that for sure. But no. I'm thinking, besides the insanity of running all of this out of your home and all of that, you know, the beauty is that it's flexible. You know, you can do a 15-minute fitting in between math lessons and you don't have to go anywhere. The people come to you and you don't have to, you know, have store hours and run out and find parking and I don't know, all those things. So I think a storefront would be amazing, but maybe it's the right thing for the right season, you know, for where you guys are in your family. I guess the grass is always greener.
No, but it makes me happy that you said that because that's something I've lately been sort of struggling over because our living space is what it is. Because they're all in the spare room, it's not like they're really in the way, quote unquote. But the spare room's like, you know, 15 by 15 feet. And I live in, how can I say this tactfully? A low-income neighborhood. And sometimes I wonder if having people come to my house makes them uncomfortable, you know? But having someone on the outside put it in a positive light like that helps me to see it in more of a positive light and be more content with where I am. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I just think it's such a beautiful picture of what we can do and how we can be creative and how we don't always need the things that we think we need. And overhead, I mean, just one less expense, one less, you know, person to staff it or rent to pay and all of those things. And so I'm so inspired by your model that continues to give, because I think there were probably different ways. I don't know if you considered other models on what to do with these dresses, but I feel like there are other ways that they could have been used. And of course, I don't have a really specific thing, but I'm, you know, just, there's so many different ways that they could have been used. They could have been, you know, only donated back to people, right? So they didn't create an income that couldn't be passed on or something like that. And so just the model where it kind of has that ripple effect that you talked about is so beautiful. So
thank you. When we were going through the process of becoming a nonprofit, like a legal one, the lawyer who was working on our paperwork, I explained the vision to him. I explained what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. And he's going through this stuff going, that doesn't really fit into any of our boxes. Because I've never seen anything quite like this set up this way where you are actually promoting other people's organizations and you're giving all of your I've never seen this one before. And I was like, okay. Can we make it fit into a box? And he's like, we'll make it fit into a box or two, maybe three.
Oh, that's so funny. So do you take any monetary donations or just clothes, accessories, wedding dresses, and the like?
Oh, no, we'll take whatever people are willing to give. Because in the end, we are trying to raise money for the Safe House, for the Pregnancy Center, for the homeless help shelter, for the missions teams that go to other countries. So if people want to put in, we do have one regular monthly donor They donate about $100 a week on a regular basis. They've been doing this for a couple of months now, which has been really good. It's been helping bring Dress Again a little more forward, making us better known. We've been able to do things like go to the local bridal expo and things like that. And so, yeah, definitely if people want to donate money, that will help, and it will help go towards those other organizations. And if people want to donate dresses, that will help. And if people want to volunteer, that's always a big help. We are trying to build a community to help the community and make a difference in people's lives. So
what's the furthest a dress has ever come to you? Do you ever get people like that ship you dresses?
China.
What?
I think, has been the Let's see. Oh, golly. How long have I been here? 3 years. So probably about a year after we started. My sister's mother-in-law, my sister's stepmother-in-law, something like that. She's a very eccentric woman, and I mean that in the truest sense of the word. And she found out what we were doing, and she went on eBay, and she just started buying stuff. She started buying wedding dresses and shoes and jewelry and everything, and having them shipped to my house. I had never met this woman. And she just bought like hundreds of dollars worth of things. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I start getting all these boxes delivered to my house, and I'm opening them up, and there's wedding dresses and there's shoes, and there's just, my inventory went from like 30 dresses to like 100 dresses in a month. And I'm going, I have no idea where this stuff is coming from. And then I'm like, maybe my kids are ordering things online. You know, just, mom, your brain just goes somewhere. I don't know, where is this coming from? And then I got a call from my sister, and I was like, oh, this stuff is just coming in the mail. And she's like, I know where it's coming from. And I was like, what? She lived in Virginia. And so she told me, she goes, no, Judy loves eBay. And when I told her what you were doing, she just went crazy. And I was like, well, tell her thank you. So we got some stuff. We've gotten stuff from everywhere.
That's incredible.
It was. It was pretty amazing.
That's so fun. So I guess in tandem with that, what's the furthest that anyone has come to shop for a dress? Is it pretty much just local folks, or have you had some people travel? Because it's a great deal. Like, I'm thinking, you know, I'm in Baltimore. If I'm getting married, but I only want to spend, you know, so much money on a wedding dress, it almost might be worth it. It still might be cheaper for me to drive to Boston, pay $100 for a wedding dress, and drive back rather than paying full price.
That's true. The farthest someone has driven was probably Rhode Island, which is, I don't know, an hour and a half away. When we went to a women's conference, we set up a table at a women's conference, and women came from all over the New England area. And this one woman was there, and she said that she knew several women who were getting married, and they would really be able to benefit from what we were doing. And so when she went home, she told them about it, and she drove them all up here one at a time. And they each got a dress. They found their perfect dress in it. And it fit them perfectly, and it fit into their budget, and they absolutely loved it. And so they all went home with just the right dress, and that was pretty cool. We do have it set up online so that people can shop online. Although, unless you're coming from, you know, Maryland, generally I recommend that people would come and try things on first, because wedding dresses are weird. For one thing, they're usually marked a size larger than what they are. And a lot of the dresses we have been altered to fit a particular woman. And dresses can be altered again to fit a different person, but you don't want to say, oh, that says it's a size 6, I'm a size 6, and then order it and have it arrive and try it on and it doesn't fit you at all.
Yeah, that's such a good point about the altering thing. I was thinking that, like, oh, well, women could always have a dress altered, which of course they can, but I was not taking into consideration the fact that a lot of them probably already come to you altered, and in some ways altered in a way that you may not be able to fully reverse, just depending on what the alterations were. So that's...
Yeah, you can usually alter a dress down. So like if a bride wants to order a dress online, I would say pick a dress that says it's a couple sizes bigger than you are, and then have it altered down to fit you. We do have one or two dresses. Most of them are altered within like a normal range. We do have one or two dresses that started out like a size 14 because the bust on the woman was like a size 14, but then the waist is like a size 2, and then the hips are like a size 12. And so there are two or three dresses which are very particular in their sizes. But the majority of them are in sort of a general, made in sort of a general way. I would just suggest getting a larger dress if you were going to order it offline.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that you even entertain the idea of selling wedding dresses online. So that's amazing. Do you ever get to use your photography skills at all when you do like your fashion shows or when you're, you know, getting dresses ready to sell online?
I do. I do, for the first couple of years, I would photograph all the dresses. A lot of the pictures you see online are pictures I took. And we would have these photo shoots. I would get girls who were willing to model the dresses, and I'd have them come. And we'd do these photo shoots, and we'd shoot probably, I don't know, 6 to 10 dresses, and it would take like 3 hours. And then I'd spend the next 3 hours editing all the pictures, you know, cutting out the good ones and changing the lighting on them. But then when it got to things like the fashion show, because putting together the fashion show was so involved, I got somebody else to take the pictures for the fashion show. And this guy who has been taking pictures, his name is Toby McKinday or something like that. I want to make sure I give him credit for it because I published one of his pictures once and I didn't even tell him. And he was like, nobody knew I took that picture. And I was like, sorry. But he is, I guess he would consider himself a professional photographer. He does a lot of really amazing work, and he comes and he shoots our fashion shows. And so a lot of the pictures you'll see online from the fashion shows are ones he took, and they're really amazing. We've gotten people to volunteer photography. We've gotten people to volunteer DJing. We've gotten people to volunteer to MC the events. So even things like that, like people will be like, oh, I don't have a dress to give. No, but you have some time. And this one girl came, she was like, I'm going to be starting fashion school in the fall, and I want to get some experience under my belt. What can I do to help with your show?
And you're so like, cool. Run the whole thing.
Run all of it. No, I've gotten, so over the course of the 4 years that we've been going, we've got four board members now. We started out with three, and one of them couldn't do it anymore, so we were down to two, and now we got two other women, and they're really amazing women and have grown along with me and along with Dress Again and learn new skills and all of that, and they help me put the shows together, and they help me do photo shoots and plan events and things like that. So super helpful.
That's amazing. Do you know of anybody else doing anything like this anywhere else in the country, or I guess in the world?
Yes and no. I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, I think I've heard of you. I think maybe I've heard of you, or maybe it was this other organization. Because somebody was telling me about another one called the Cinderella Project, I think. But I think they do more like prom gowns, and I think they distribute them to seniors at schools who can't afford to buy prom gowns. And I think they bring in the whole rack of dresses, and they tell the seniors to come in and pick ones off the rack that they want. So I haven't heard of another organization that is doing exactly what we are doing. There are others that are doing some similar sorts of things, helping girls get dresses. I'm pretty sure there's one organization, and I don't know what it's called, that collects wedding gowns to help support research for breast cancer or something like that. But I don't know what they do with it. Like, I don't know how they recycle the dresses to make that work. But both of those are in other parts of the country. One of them, I think, is in New Hampshire. I don't know where the other one is. But I haven't found anybody who's doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah. So basically, bottom line is, if you have a wedding dress to donate, it needs to go to Dress Again. And if you need an inexpensive wedding dress or just to support a great cause, because I feel like even if I could afford a $1,000 wedding dress, I would be tempted to come buy a Dress Again dress just for the fact that it's a great cause and it's a
because
great,
it's helping somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like a smart consumer decision. So,
yeah.
So as we wrap up, what is like a call to action that you would like to give to the listeners? And it doesn't have to be specific to Dress Again, as in like, you know, go to our website right away and donate. People should do that as well. And we're going to put the website address on the show notes page, but just in general, from your experience in running a nonprofit and having a big heart and helping other people, what's your wish that other people would do in terms of action steps?
I am really glad you asked that question. I would say if you're going to help somebody, if you're going to become a part of something or volunteer for something or give your time, I applaud that and I encourage that. Be reliable. As someone who works with volunteers, as someone who runs a nonprofit, and so much of our help comes from volunteers, having people say, I will be there to help you, and then not show up is devastating. It doesn't just because you're not getting paid for it doesn't mean you're not needed. I've had people volunteer and say, I will be there to help you, and then not show up and have it actually cost Dress Again hundreds of dollars because they weren't there. We love our volunteers. We love the people who say, I'm going to be there, and they are, and they give everything, and they do what needs to be done. That's amazing. We really appreciate it. But don't, like, we would rather have you just honestly say, I can't make it, than say, I'll be there, and we're counting on you, and you don't come. So what I would say, call to action, be reliable. If you can't do it, say you can't do it. If you say you can do it, be there.
That's such a good word, because I think that unreliability piece is one of my biggest pet peeves. And I think sometimes it comes from really well-meaning people who think that you're doing a great thing. And so when there's a call to action specifically for Dress Again, like, hey, we need volunteers to come help at our fashion show, or we need people to help sort dresses, or whatever the thing may be, people have a hard time saying no because they feel like they're going to be a jerk. Like, and you're like, I'm doing this great thing. Want to come with me? And they're like, nope, sorry. So instead they say yes, because it feels easier in the moment. But there's really, you're right, there's huge repercussions for volunteers not showing up. And I think in bigger organizations, it's always an issue. But, you know, if there's a lot of volunteers and maybe 1% don't show up, you can kind of cover. But when you're a small organization and volunteers say they're going to come and then they don't, it leaves a huge gaping hole in the operation. And when you don't have a lot of people and when you're small, like, every volunteer is like gold. You know, you like know every single one of them. You know, it's not like, you know, you have this a stadium full of volunteers or anything. Like, someone says, oh, I'll volunteer, and you like know their name and their face and what they said they were going to do and when they're going to show up, and you count on that. When we had our coffee shop, it was like that for customers for us, because obviously we didn't have a very successful coffee shop. But, you know, people would say, like, I'm going to come visit you, or I'll be back later this afternoon. And then they wouldn't come, and I'd be driving home, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, that person never came. Like, every customer counts.
Then you see them on Facebook, and you're like, hi, friend.
Yeah.
No, I know, it's like people volunteer out of the goodness of their heart, and that's wonderful. Boom. But, like, there are nice ways to say, I really can't help. And if you can't, just say it. It's fine. We don't mind. We'll find somebody who can.
Right. It gives you the opportunity to fill the space with someone who really can do it. Yeah. And it gives someone else the opportunity to say yes. I'm a yes person. So I'm not an unreliable yes person, but I'm just the person who says yes until, like, she can't walk anymore.
And then you kill yourself, yeah?
Right. And I remember reading a great book. I think it was, like, Having a Merry Heart in a Martha World or something like that. And she said something really striking to me, which
is, you know, that book.
If you say yes and you're not called to it, then you're stepping on someone else's yes. Like, God was going to call someone else to that, and you jumped up when you weren't supposed to. And now you, like, stole someone else's opportunity to serve in that capacity, because
that is very interesting thing. Wow.
Yeah, and it was so convicting to me because I am such a yes person. And now when I want to say yes, I'm always trying to double examine myself to be like, okay, am I really called to this, or am I just doing it because I want to say yes? I don't want to have to say no to someone, or because I want to be involved, or whatever the, you know, other alternative motivation may be. And I think, gosh, if I say no, they're going to keep looking for someone. And maybe there's someone who isn't as quick to their yes, who needs to be called to this, and I'm going to steal it from them. So that's how I'm learning to say no.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's how I'm learning to say no. That's a really great way of looking at it.
So
people do that. I do that. You'll be like, this person really needs help, and I like helping people.
Right. But, it must be a match made in heaven.
Yeah, that's true.
But clearly you were called to say yes to wedding dresses and repurposing them. And that calling was so clear in your life. And just how far you guys have come in such a short period of time is clearly evident of that. And I am so grateful that you took a little bit of your time to share your story. And I hope that it's helpful to you, that other people get to hear about it and more people donate and shop and do all the things to help just further the impact that you guys are able to have with the organizations that you're partnering with. It's just such a cool idea. It's such a cool story of that faithful yes where you jump even when you're like, I don't know if this is my thing.
Yeah, well, I'm really grateful that I got to do this and to talk to you and to tell you all about it. And, you know, it's one of those things where God calls you into something that is so far out of your field that only he can be glorified for it.
Absolutely.
And he teaches you what you need to know. And if you feel like God wants you to do something, you're going, but I don't know how to do it. Trust him. He'll teach you how to do it.
Such good advice. Such good advice. Well, I'm so thankful that you're willing to take those big steps of faith and bless so many people around you. And the stories that you tell are inspiring and challenging and really, really fun to listen to. So again, thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you.
Guys, isn't O'Shea great? I love how she gets so excited talking about what she's doing. Her passion and enthusiasm are contagious. Also, where was she when I was wedding gown shopping on a college girl's budget? $150? If you have a friend planning a wedding, she needs to know about this. Also, did you catch that she's living in an apartment? Not even a house with a yard where she can banish her kids to, while she basically runs a bridal shop out of her house. Amazing. I hope you'll check out her website and the amazing organizations she's supporting. Consider showing your support with a small donation. If we all give a little, it will add up quickly. All the info is on the show notes page at www.thecorkums.com. Whether you can swing a monetary donation now or not, everyone can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It will help others learn about Dress Again so more folks can be impacted. Lastly, I love hearing your feedback about which stories connected or maybe didn't, and who you'd love to hear on the show. I'm at M.A. Corkum on Instagram and Twitter, and you can even find me if you go to facebook.com/M.A. Corkum. If you post about the show, use the hashtag #TheUncorkedPodcast. Thanks so much, and talk to you next week.